Good morning. Today's daf in Chulin Kuf Chavav. We are in the ninth parak of Masechta Chulin, which is a parak dedicated to the topic of Tumah Tahara. And we are going to be discussing today, no different than we have last week, in Yanei Tumah Tahara. The parak comes to an end in the end of this week. Friday we finish off the parak in Yirtzeh Hashem. We are behind. We're going to make a push. Yesterday we made a great push in terms of catching up. Today we're going to continue to do so in terms of catching up. And Tumah Tahara is it's a foreign area for us, meaning in the Daf Yomi we don't do Mishnayos of Tumah Tahara, so we're unfamiliar with some of the most basic information regarding Tumah Tahara, and that's an attempt to explain why I've been going so slow lately. Let's go. We are in Kuf Chav Hamad Aleph, and we're towards the bottom of the Amud, and we are in the middle of trying to understand the Mishnah. The Mishnah taught us yesterday. The Mishnah started on the very bottom of Kuf Chav Dal Amud Beis, and it talked about Kliyos Ameis. It talked about the thigh bone of a human being. Thigh bone of a human being, and then the Mishnah goes on to discuss a whole bunch of other thigh bones as well, Kliyos HaMukdashim. But anyway, Hanogea Behem. The Mishnah taught us that if I were to touch the thigh bone, this is now of a human. Again, the Mishnah talks about others as well. But our focus today will be primarily, in fact, exclusively, on human remains and the Tumah of human remains, Tumas Mace. So the Mishnah says, Hanogea Behem, Bein Stumim, Bein Nekuvim, Tameh. So if you to touch them, so whether or not they're perforated or non-perforated, you are going to be tummy. Now the Mishnah, of course, is very confusing. It's very perplexing. The Gemara immediately jumped on that. And the Gemara's point is, wait one second, let's try to understand. Now obviously we know that the bone, the etzamos of a mace is metame b'mago v'masa. You touch it, you carry it, you're going to become tummy. It does not give off tumas ohal. There are limited circumstances, as I mentioned yesterday, where the bones are going to give off tumas ohal, but under normal circumstances, they're not going to give off tumas ohal. And all you need is etzim ka'adashi. You just simply need a chip of a bone, and it's going to be a transmitter of tumah both through maga and through masa. That's what we know. So I understand the part of the Mishnah that says that if I touch the bone, I'm going to be tummy. That part's easy. However, we're talking about a thigh bone. A thigh bone has marrow inside of it. If the thigh bone has marrow inside of it, that marrow inside of it is considered mace. That's human remains vis-a-vis tumas ohel. And so therefore, the thigh bone should give off tumas ohel, and it does not. And that's the clear implication of the Mishnah yesterday. The Mishnah, in fact, says that if I were to touch it, I'd become Tameh. And the clear implication is that it only gives off Tumas Maga and not Tumas Ohel. Now, we noted yesterday the Mishnah doesn't talk about Masa. It doesn't talk about carrying. Tosus already made that point yesterday in terms of why the Mishnah didn't mention Masa. But the clear contrast of the Mishnah is you're only going to be Tameh B'Maga and you're not going to be Tameh B'Ohel by coming into contact with this bone. With marrow inside of it, why not? The marrow inside of it, let's assume there's a kezias of marrow inside of it. That's meat, that's basar. And so therefore, that tumah should go up. And the bone is not going to encase it because when tumas ohel has the properties in which it just simply ascends. The only thing that's going to stop tumas ohel from ascending is a roof. Now over here, we're going to be speaking a lot about this today. So let's go over the dimensions of a roof. It's actually very simple. You need an airspace. You need a 1x1 minimum area of roof, length and width. 1x1 tefach, small, it's 4x4 inches, right? Approximately. So as long as I have an airspace of 1 tefach and a roof that is minimum 1 tefach, so that is now going to be a roof, that's going to stop the tumah from going up. Anything below that, when I say below that, I mean in both dimensions. Meaning, let's say the airspace is less than 1 tefach, the tumah is just going to shoot right past the roof. If, let's say, the area of the roof itself is less than 1x1, so then once again, the tumah is just going to shoot right past that roof. And it's just going to keep ascending. So basically over here, so when we're talking about tumas ohel, if there is a marrow of a kezias in the bone, so that's going to give off tumas ohel. And why is the Mishnah clearly telling us it's not going to give off tumas ohel? That was the question, and the Gemara yesterday gave us 3 answers to that question. The first answer is the answer of Rav Yehuda Bered Rabbi Chia. First of all, forget the idea that the bone is not going to, it's not going to regenerate, meaning obviously now it's not going to regenerate. It's, you know, the body's dead. But even if we're connected, it's not going to generate. Meaning he taught us yesterday that the marrow inside of the bone does not have regenerative properties. And as far as why isn't, okay, fine. So that's why, but that only explains why it's not going to be a limb. It's not going to be an aver. But why isn't the moch inside going to just simply allow the tumah to go up? And his answer was, because there's not a kezias of moach inside the bone. And I asked the question yesterday, how are we going to know that? But assuming we know that, right, we took an MRI. So the there's no tumas ohel simply because you don't have a kezias of moach. That's answer number one. Abaye gives a different answer. Abaye says, that no, the I'm sorry. On this point, Abaye agrees. On a separate point, Abaye disagrees. But on this point, Abaye agrees that you don't have a kezias within the bone. And the third answer of the Gemara is Rav Yochanan. Rav Yochanan says, no, there is a kezias of marrow inside of the bone. And in the Mishnah, when it actually says the words nogea, the Mishnah actually means ohel. Ah. This is the third answer of Rav Yochanan, that the Mishnah is actually describing and discussing Tumas Ohel. It just uses the language of Maga and Ohel as interchangeable languages. So even though, yes, the Tumah is going to shoot up, and the Mishnah says, Hanogea behem nogea behem means contact, not physical contact, halachic contact. How are you halachically making contact with the Tumah? Tumas Ohel. That's the answer of Rav Yochanan. Now the benefit of Rav Yochanan, even though he's taking a word in the Mishnah and really taking it out of its literal meaning and its simple meaning, but the benefit of it is that you didn't have the problems that that Abaye and Rav Yehuda Bar Yehuda Rabbi Chiya had, which is that basically you are taking the Mishnah and you're chopping it up. First half of the Mishnah is talking about less than a kezias, and all the other cases in the Mishnah are talking about where there's a kezias. Right? That's what the earlier Amoraim had to say. But according to Rav Yochanan, Rav Yochanan works out great. Our Mishnah is talking about where there's always going to be a kezias of moach within the bone. What about Tumas Ohel? Not a question. That's the answer. There is Tumas Ohel. Where do you see that in the Mishnah? The word Hanogea. That is what we saw yesterday. That's what we got up to yesterday. So let's continue where we picked up yesterday. Amar Rabbi Yochanan. All right. We did this. Hachem Amaskin could go into Ika Kazayas Meis, Hamaskashish, Kabe Meis Tuma, Bakas Vola, Nevela Kevin, Nemaskashishu, Nikva Inlo, Nikva Lo. Amar Rabbi Avin. Okay, perfect. Okay, this is where we left off yesterday. And Kuf Chavhe Amud Aleph at the bottom of the Amud. Amar Rabbi Avin, Vitem, Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Avin, Afanami Tanin. We learned this as well. Hanugebe Chachasi Zayas. Let's say, in one hand, I'm touching a Chatsi Zayas of a mace. Okay, not enough to give off Tuma. On the other hand, Mahil al Chatsi Zayas, Chatsi Zayas Mahil alav, Tame. And then in my other hand, I'm not touching mace, but I'm actually, my hand is roofing over remains. Meaning my hand is literally directly above or directly below. Tuma can go in either direction, up or down. Directly above or directly below human remains. And in the other hand, it is directly above a Chatsi Zayas. So it's a strange visual, I admit. But in one hand now, I'm physically touching a Chatsi Zayas. In the other hand, it is serving as a roof over a Chatsi Zayas of mace. The question's really simple. It's Starfus. Do they now combine? We know we need it in order to become Tummy. You need a requisite shear. The requisite shear is a Kazayas. And so now, can these two methods of contraction of Tuma, of communication of Tuma, can they be mitzaref? Now, it basically gets on to the question of, is it one mechanism or are they two totally separate mechanisms? Now, iyamar bishlam achad shmahu mishum hachi mitzaref. So I'm sorry. The Rebbe, he quotes a brisa, it's a Mishnah in Oelos, that states clearly that you are going to be Tameh. In other words, so the Mishnah tells us point blank, you are going to be tummy. Now on that, now we're going to basically do the analysis, and the analysis is very straightforward. Perfect. Touching tuma and serving as an olens on tuma is one and the same thing, meaning mechanically. So if they're one and the same thing, so therefore they can combine. Perfect. However, if they are two different mechanisms, they cannot be mitzaref. If Maga and Ohel are two totally separate mechanisms, so one hand is touching Chatsi Zayas, the other hand is serving as a roof over Chatsi Zayas, and they will not combine. By virtue of the fact that we know the conclusion that they will combine, so says the Mishnah in Ohelos, so therefore it's the same mechanism. And therefore that supports our analysis of the Mishnah, Rav Yochanan's analysis of the Mishnah, that when the Mishnah says Maga, it actually is a reference to Ohel, because mechanically they're the same. Gemara says, that's all well and good until we get to the next part of the Mishnah. V'hatanan, now we're continuing in the very same Mishnah. This is the third parak of Oelos, the first Mishnah. Ze'akla kol shu mishem echa mitzaref v'tame. Mishnei she'emos tahor. If you are introducing tuma from two vantage points, but they're the same shame, they're the same method, so contact and contact, each one is a contact with a chatsi zayas. But that's Nagia. That's going to be, you're going to be Tameh. However, if they're shnei shemos, so then you're not going to be tamei. So shnei shemos tara. Ella my chad shmahu. I'm sorry. So the Gemara says, now let's take a look. Sorry, I jumped ahead just a little bit. Now let's take a look at the second half of that Mishnah. Hanogea b'kechatzi zayis, v'davar echad mal alav, v'al kechatzi zayis tahor. So the Gemara says, okay, but here is another circumstance where I am touching a chatzi zayis and Davar Echem Mahil Alav, the Al Chatzi Zayas, Tahor. And then, so in one hand I'm touching a Chatzi Zayas, good. In my other hand is underneath a roof that's underneath Tumas Mace. So under those circumstances, I am Tahor. Wait one second. How could you be Tahor? Meaning, hasn't the whole thesis been that Nigia and Ohel are mechanically the same thing? And so therefore, if one hand is physically touching a chatzis zayis, and the other hand is sharing a roof that has a chatzis zayis, so then I should be tameh. What's the Mishnah talking about over here? So, am I tahor? So, elakasha resha. So now, really, the truth of the matter is that, let's now assume that maga and ohel are not the same. Let's assume that. Now, of course, by the way, that destroys our entire thesis. Meaning, we were trying to build an entire thesis on the premise that ohel and maga are one and the same, categorically the same, mechanically the same. And now we're saying that it's not the same. Okay, fine. It's not the same. Again, we're going to have to revisit a lot of what we learned earlier. But the problem, of course, is the Mishnah and Ohelos. Meaning the Mishnah and Ohelos, in the beginning of the third perek of Ohelos, so the opening of the Mishnah said that if I touch with one hand and I serve as a roof over the other hand, so I'm going to be tameh. And then the next half of the very same Mishnah says, oh no, if I touch one half kezias and my other hand is sharing a roof with another half kezias, well, I'm going to be tahor. So before we go any further, the Gemara is basically going to say, how did you understand the Mishnah in Ohelos, where the Mishnah is obviously a stira onto itself? Elakasha Resha. So Amar Rebbe Zera Betumah Ritzutza Bein Beis Migdalim Askinan Ve'ein Beinem Poseach Tefach Dekula Negiahi. So the Gemara says, okay, here's what we'll do. We'll take the ratio of that Mishnah, and we will say that the ratio of the Mishnah is talking about an extraordinarily specific case. And that is the following. Now, in the one hand, I'm touching a chatzi zayis of mace. That's easy. That's maga. That we all got. What's my second hand doing right now? So it is serving as a roof over a mace, but in a very specific situation. The way Rashi describes it, I mean, the Gemara kind of describes it, but with very little explanation. The way Rashi describes it, I have now a mace that are stuck between two closets. For the purpose of this discussion, let's say the closets are really big, and we know that once the closet gets big enough, it becomes impervious to tuma. Fine. And so therefore, the closets themselves are not going to be any help or hindrance towards the tuma. Now, what the space between these two closets, these two chests, are going to be less than a tefach. And so now what's going to happen with the mace that is situated right between these two chests? So what's going to happen now is it's going to basically squeeze its way, not physically, halachically, the tumah is going to squeeze its way through the top of the roof. Now, even though you do not have a tefach area, and I'm not talking about any roof right now, there is no roof, but even though you don't have a tefach area, nevertheless, the tumah just kind of squeezes through in order to get to the top of the chest. You put your hand directly over that airspace between the two chests. Now, even though you're tameh, that's clear, and even though it's ohel, this is special tumas ohel. I'll give it a name. It's called tumah ritzutza. Okay, now that we have a way to describe it. And what we're learning right now is that even though we'll call that ohel, it's really maga. It's really negiya. Now, even though physically I'm not touching the mace, but because over here the tumah is just basically piercing through and the area between the two chests are less than a tefach, so that tumah is as if the tumah basically is climbing up that airspace, and when my hand goes over it, I am ki'ilu physically touching the tumah itself. So, it's like totally, that area is totally filled up with tumah, and so therefore it is maga with one hand and maga with the other hand. That's how we're going to explain the ratio of that Mishnah. Now that we explain the ratio of the Mishnah that way, what does that mean? It means under normal Ohel circumstances, Ohel is not the same as Maga. Awal and Maga are two different mechanisms in terms of how to contract Tuma. Fine. Now that's all fine in terms of the Mishnah and Awalos. However, Rav Yochanan is going to have a problem now, because Rav Yochanan explained that our entire Mishnah is talking about the thigh bone of a human, where there is a kezias of moach in the thigh bone, and there's no tumas ohel. And Rav Yochanan's answer is, no, there is tumas ohel, because the Mishnah, when it says nogea, is referring to ohel. And because he's saying that nogea and ohel are interchangeable, it's the same mechanism. And therefore, the Mishnah over here, when it says nogea, is referring to ohel. But we have just now gone through the Mishnah and ohelos, and we've learned that at least the Mishnah and ohelos does not agree with that. Okay? So we don't have the Mishnah and ohelos to support us. Now that we don't have the Mishnah and ohelos to support us, in order to be able to defend Rav Yochanan's answer, we need support. We need backup. Where is that going to come from? That's the next part of the Gemara. Umantana dekari la'ol nogeya. So who is of the opinion that ohel and negiya are interchangeable and they're essentially the same mechanism? Rabbi Yossi he. So we do have a Tana who subscribes to that, and that's the opinion of Rabbi Yossi. Detanya Rabbi Yossi omer melotavet rekav mitame b'magav amasav ohel. Now, Rabbi Yossi is of the following opinion. First of all, we're talking now about a ladle full of decomposed body. Okay, now this is unpleasant to think about, but the halacha is very clear. If I have a body with nothing exterior to the body itself, it's just a human body that has undergone full decomposition, and basically that decomposed human body is now reduced into a spoon, into a rekev, the rekev is the decomposed body, into a tarvad, into a spoon. So the halacha l'moshe Sinai is that this spoon is now going to give off tumas meis. And according to Rav Yossi, we're going to hit all three. Maga, masa, and ohel. It's going to give off tuma in all three manners. Now, later we're going to learn that not all Tanaim agree with this in terms of how many ways it's going to contract tuma, it's going to communicate tuma. But our purpose right now is just to focus on the sheet of Rav Yossi. Now, I can easily envision, look, you need a shear, meaning this is an unusual transference of tumas meis through decomposed body in a spoon. It's very unusual. And in order for the tumah to transmit from this spoon to something else, so it needs the requisite shear of a spoonful. Good. That part we get. And when I'm carrying it, I'm carrying all of it. And when I'm sharing a roof with it, I'm sharing a roof with all of it. I understand that. So But let me ask you a question. How do you make contact with it? Meaning, you touch it. Okay? And it's really unpleasant. But okay, fine. But you touch it. You're not touching all of it. You're just simply touching some of it. There is no way that you're going to be able to make physical contact with every particle of this decomposition. So how does that work? So it must be that when Rav Yossi says you touch it, it means that you served as a roof over it. That must be the pshat in that statement of Rav Yossi, and you see that ohel and maga are really mechanically the same thing. And so therefore, there's another example where the term maga is used, but it really means ohel. Now the Gemara says, now wait 1 second. Right? Did you see the statement of Rav Yossi? It says that it can communicate to him in one of three ways. Maga, masa, and ohel. You're telling me that maga over there means mahil. So then the Bryce is telling me, let's now read the Bryce again with our new understanding. Mahil, masa, and ohel. So we just covered ohel twice. The Gemara is bothered exactly that by that point. Va'ahakitani nogea, va'ahakitani mahil. So amar abaye, lamata mitefach ohel, nigia, lamala mitefach ohel greida. So Abai's answer is like this. Well, you're right. It says OL twice, but there's OL and then there's OL. If your hand is within a tefach of the airspace of the item, that's OL, and let's call that OL Maga. Meaning that we'll call it Tumas OL, but because you're so proximate to the actual mace itself, so it's Ki'ilu as if you're touching it. And when your hand is above a tefach, above the decomposed body, so then that's just... we'll call it ohel greda, ohel by itself. That is the way to understand Rav Yossi. Rava amar afilu lamala mitefach nami ohel negiyahu. So the Gemara says, Rava says, no, you don't have to say that. Look, your hand is above a tefach of the actual spoonful of decomposed body. Vehechi dami ohel greda bamshacha. And again, the Braisa doesn't bother me. Because look, there's ohel and then there's mahil. And let's explain in the following manner, right? If, let's say, just for the purposes of illustration, if my pencil over here serves as a human remains, so now, by putting my hand directly over it, let's say there's no roof over our head, by putting my hand directly over it, so that I'm going, that's going to be transmission of tumah. We're going to call that mahil, where my hand is actually serving as the roof over the human remains. That's one method of transmission. And another would be where we are sharing the same roof. And this is what the Gemara calls hamshacha. By the way, traditionally, when we think about tumas ohel, this is generally what we think about, where the mace is here, I'm standing right here, and we're both sharing the same roof. We're both underneath the same roof. So that is what the Gemara describes as hamshacha. So Rava says that's what Rav Yossi means. Rav Yossi means that if one of the references of ohel is mahil, where my hand is directly over, and the other is where we're sharing a roof together, and that is the two references of the Brisa. Vehechi dami ohel greida b'hamshacha. Sorry, Amar Rava mina amina la didnan. And now Rava says, and look, I'm going to prove that this is so. Meaning, we're going to see, once again, another piece of evidence that strongly supports the idea that according to Rabbi Yossi, you are, Maga and Ohel are pretty much interchangeable, and we're going to learn a brisa together. Rabbi Yossi Omer Chavila Mita, Usirige Chalonos Chotzitzin Bein Habayis Le'aliyah. Okay. Let's say we have the following. It's basically lattice. And the lattice over here is made up, it could either be made up of ropes, or it could be made up of thin beams. Whatever the case is, it's some sort of lattice work. Right? The first one being described over the Chavile Mita, back in the good old days, your bed was made of basically a frame and ropes that were latticed through the frame posts in order to create something that people would lie down on. It's a cot. It's a simple cot. And so over here, we're taking our lattice work and we're using it as kind of like, it's not the support beam separating the first and the second floor, but between the support beams, so you have some sort of, let's call it a roof, let's call it a floor for the second floor. Okay, I don't know if it could withhold people's weight. You know, it's kind of like our drywalls. Now, it's not going to be able to hold the weight of people, but whatever. Okay, anyway, it serves there as part of the partition. Halachically, it's a roof. And halachically, it's going to stop the tumah from going up. Now, let's consider. Obviously, in a lattice, if we're all looking at the same thing together, so there are obviously going to be holes in the lattice. So why doesn't the tumah go through the holes? And the answer is because of these holes are not large enough halachically to allow the tumah to go through. If these holes are less than a tefach by a tefach, so then halachically they stop the tumah from going through. Okay, there's also another point to consider, lavud, which is not going to be our discussion. The Gemara is not going to bring it up. Lavud is anything that is less than three tefachim is going to be considered closed. But for our purposes, let's leave that out of the discussion. Let's just simply say that the whole space is less than a tefach. Good. Now, chavile mito v'sriga chalons chotzitzim bein abayis la'aliyah shalol achnis tumah letzad sheni. Okay. So the first part is very simple. The lattice work is going to serve as a halachic barrier, stopping the tumas ohel from going any higher than the lattice. That part's easy. Now it gets a little trickier. Pearson al gabi ames, be'avir hanogeya, keneged hanekev tame, shelo keneged hanekev tahor. Now let's say we take the lattice and we put it over the mace. And it's less than a tefach from the mace. So now, if my hand is keneged hanekev, if my hand goes anywhere in the whole space of the lattice, so that means the tumah was able to go right through. If, however, it's shelo keneged hanekev, if let's say my hand went directly over the actual lattice itself, the structure of the lattice itself, my hand is going to be tahor. Now, with all that stated, this requires understanding and analysis. Hei chidami. Now, if this lattice is placed directly within a tefach of the mace, I don't understand. It should be no different than the clothing worn by a mace. Clothing worn by a mace, is that going to stop the tumah? Of course not. Meaning the clothing worn by a mace is not going to stop the tumah from going any higher. So over here, it is lamala mitefach. So unlike our original assumption that the lattice was actually put within a tefach, and by the way, it was a pretty good understanding. The language of the Brisa was pearson. You spread it over. But now what we're suggesting is you spread it over, not resting on the mace, but over, meaning above the mace. And now what we're saying is it's higher than the tefach. The kakari le nogeya. And meanwhile, what's the language employed by the Braisa? The word negiya. And so once again, this is a proof that according to Rav Yossi, the word ohel and negiya are the same mechanism. Good. Amar Rabbi la'olam lamata mitefach. Rabbi says, I don't have to conclude that way. Here's what I could argue. That really it's lamata mitefach hudekamart meis b'ksusohu. And as to the argument of, well, it's like wearing clothing, it's not like wearing clothing. Meis b'ksuso mevatalei. Haila mevatalei. When a mace is wearing clothing, so then you understand that the clothing is totally mevutal. It's totally secondary. It's ancillary to the actual mace himself. And so therefore the clothing, even though it is actually being worn by the mace, is not going to stop the tumah from going up. Masha Enkein, if you're putting something over the mace, so that'll stop the tumah from going up. So the Gemara says, V'tahave ketumah timuna bokas va'ola. So the Gemara says, now wait one second. Here's the part that I'm a little bit confused by. So we are now describing a scenario in which I have a lattice over the mace. And we said that if your hand is in the whole space, so that you're going to be tummy, because the tumah is going to go through the whole space. If your hand is over the actual lattice itself, it's going to be tahor. So the Gemara says, why? This is what the Gemara now describes as tumah temuna. Now, tumah temuna, we're really acquainting ourselves with a lot of terminology and a lot of concepts regarding tumas mace today. We already discussed this morning tumas ritzutza. So now the Gemara is describing tumah temuna. Tumah temuna, not the same thing. We're talking ritzutza is where your area space is less than a tefach. Over here, we're talking about the vertical space being less than a tefach, and the Gemara describes this now as tumah temuna, and the Gemara says that it should be bokas va'ola, meaning being that there's no airspace that separates between, there's no tefach airspace separating the mace and that which is over it, so what the tumah should do is the tumah should go straight up, and not only over the airspace between the lattice, but it should go directly over the lattice as well. So the Gemara says, the tumah temuna bokas va'ola, kasav Rabbi Yossi tumah temuna eino bokas, and the Gemara says, okay, so I will say like this, that generally speaking, if you asked most Tanaim, and I'll add Amoraim as well, but let's right now stay with the Tanaim. If you ask most Tanaim, look, if there's no tefach airspace between the mace and that which is above it, so is it going to stop the tumah? And the answer is going to be no, and the tumah is just going to continue to go up. But if you were to ask Rabbi Yossi, is that going to stop the tumah? And Rabbi Yossi maintains the shita, which seems to be a das yachid. There is, at least in today's daf, no corroborating other tana that supports this viewpoint. But okay, Rabbi Yossi is of the opinion that tumah temuna ain't a bokas. That if I have something over the mace, and even though it's within a tefach, it stops the tumah from going up. Now, this is an interesting shita of Rav Yossi. In other words, according to Rav Yossi, when the body's buried in the ground, does that mean to say now that the tumah doesn't go up? It's hard to imagine. In other words, I don't know if Rav Yossi would take this position by your standard covering of the body, meaning earth, for example, or the coffin, for example. Hard to imagine. Let's at least for today just simply suggest that according to Rav Yossi, this is only when you put a foreign item directly over the mace, like the lattice that we described just a moment earlier. Umina tamra did not. And the Gemara says, and I'll show you that this is in fact so. And we're going to learn this morning another Mishnah Nola. Stevas amikdash yesh ba poseach tefach ve'em biyitzias poseach tefach. So the Gemara over here is describing now the following. It's basically a cabinet with a bunch of cubby holes in them. Now the cubby hole is very unusual. In order to put, now the actual cubby themselves have the cubic tefach, but the opening of the cubby hole is less than a tefach. Okay, somehow it narrows towards the entrance.
Are they facing upward or down?
They're facing sideways. It seems like they're facing sideways. Tevas amigdosh yesh ba poseach tefach ve'en biyitzias poseach tefach. Tumah besocha habayis tameh. Now if there's tumah inside of it, I know how to get inside. Okay, but not for now. So if there's tumah inside of it, so the house is going to be tamei. Tumah bebayis, masha besocha tamar. Now, if the tumah is in the house, so whatever is the cubbies themselves are going to be protected from the tumah. Mimnesha derech tumah latzis ve'ein derech tumah likanes. Because the mace now that's in the cubby hole itself, what's going to happen? Eventually, we're going to take the human remains out of there. And so this is another concept for today, sof toma latzes. And that is that if we know the general pathway, right, if we were to Google map where exactly this mace is going, and we can easily predict its course of exit, of egress, so that means all the areas that it's going to exit into are going to be tame. This is a concept of tuma sofa latzes. So in anticipation, it's already going to be tame. So because the human remains is in the cubby, and because we know we're going to take it out of the cubby, so therefore, it's simply going to exit and go out currently. Now, that is the opinion of the Tanakhama. The opposite's not true, by the way. Meaning, if the mace is in the house, and you have other items, other kalim in the cubby hole, and because the entrance is less than a tefach, so what's going to happen now is that it's going to protect the area in the cubby from becoming tummy. Fine. That's all good. That's not the part that we want. We want the next part of the braisa. Rabbi Yossi mitaher mimishiyachu hu lotzi ala chatzayin or lesorfer bimkom. Now Rabbi Yossi says, no. Because even though I agree with the basic concept of tumas sofa latzes, and by the way, Tosfos on the very bottom makes exactly that point, he's not fundamentally disagreeing. It's just over here, there is a way of removing the mace or destroying the mace, and therefore no tumah has to be communicated. You can either cut it into pieces and remove it in pieces, less than a shear, or...
How could I do the mace? I mean, that's not even an option. Like, what? How could he raise that as a possibility?
He did. Sorry. I know. I hear you, but he did.
It's not even a common thing. It's totally forbidden. So how could he raise that as an option?
I'm with you. I appreciate your question. I don't have an answer. He says it. So lahotzi. I'm sorry. I know that's not satisfactory, but he says it. Lahotzi lechatzayin o lesorfa bimkoma or burn it right there, and the katani seifa hamida bepesach upischa lechutz. Tuma besocha abayis tahor. Now, the so far so good. We got the basic structure of the case over here and the machlokas between the Tanakam and Rabbi Yossi. Now, we're going to continue in the Braisa. Hey, amida bepesach, if I put it in the doorway, upischa lechutz, and it's going to the outside, tuma besocha habayis tahor. If the tuma is inside of it, the house is going to be tahor. Tuma bebayis, if the tuma is in the house, masha besocha tahor, that which is inside of it is going to be tahor. Utsniya la Rabbi Yossi Matayr. And then on top of that, Rabbi Yossi says it's Tahor. What is Rabbi Yossi talking about as we turn now to the top of Kuch Chavav Amud Aleph? So Ahayeilema Sefer, are we talking about the Sefer Tanakami Namitur Kamatayr? So the Tanakama is also Matayr in that case. Ella Dekamer Tanakama Tuma Besocha Habayis Tame on the situation where the Tuma is in the cubby. And the Tanakhama says the house is going to be Tameh. So, imishum de derech tumalatzeis, vi imishum de tumatmuna bokas. And the reason why is for one of two possibilities. One, because of the principle of tumas sofalatzeis. Okay, as we explain. Once I could see the exit plan of the tumah, and I know that the tumah is going to go from the cubby into the house, so therefore the house is going to be Tameh. That's one. Or two, imishum tumatmuna bokas. Or maybe because the area in which the mace is in the cubbyhole is such a constricted area that basically it's tuma bokas, meaning it's tuma tmuna, meaning it's not a tefach of airspace separating the mace and the top of the cubby, and so therefore what the tuma is going to do is it's simply going to penetrate through the top. One of those two reasons, either one of them, would be enough to be cause for making the rest of the house tame. Good. That is the shita of the Tanakhama. And now, Rabbi Yossi... And Rav Yossi and now Vikamale Rav Yossi Dikamar Derech Tomalatzeis Yachulotzi Alachatzein Lasorfa Bimkama. So let me address each point, says Rav Yossi. Point number one, exit strategy, right? Our exit plan. Rav Yossi says I don't subscribe to that in this particular case, because what you could do is you could either break it into two, bringing it out in Chatzi Shir, or you could burn it right there in its spot. So as far as Tomalatzeis in this particular scenario, I disagree. That's point number one. Point number two, udikamar tuma tumuna bokas, tuma tumuna eno bokas. And here Rav Yossi says, and here's where I disagree with your second point. You say that if the covering over it is less than a tefach vertically from the mace, it's not going to prevent the tuma from going up and spreading out through the rest of the house. I disagree fundamentally on that point. I subscribe that tuma tumuna, that a covered tuma is going to stop the tuma from spreading anymore. Okay. Adkan. Where are we this morning? Okay, lost in the sea of Tumas Meis. But where are we right now? So let me just quickly outline the Gemara that we've done up until now, and hopefully we're gonna make our way through the door case, and not fully catch up, but do pretty well. We started with a Mishnah this morning regarding the human thigh left in the house, and the question of how come the Mishnah does not mention Tumas Ohel. There is moach in that thigh, that's human remains, and that should give off Tumas Ohel, and the Mishnah doesn't mention it. So the answers of Rabbi Yehuda Bered, Rabbi Chia, and Abaye is it's less than a kezias. The answer of Yochanan is there is Tumas Ohel. Where do you see in the Mishnah? I don't see the word Ohel in the Mishnah. You do see in the Mishnah. Look again. The Mishnah says the word Nogea, and the words Nogea and Ohel are interchangeable. And then, from that point going forward, we look for our Tana. Which Tana is of the opinion that Maga and Ohel are interchangeable? Mechanically, they're one and the same thing. And so we tried looking at a Mishnah in Ohelos in the third Perek, although we struck out over there, that got us to a dead end. That Mishnah does not subscribe to the rule. And so then we identified, and this is basically what we've been doing now for the last Amud, we identified as Rav Yossi being our Tana. Rav Yossi is of the opinion that Maga and Ohel are interchangeable. There are a number of cases that suggested that according to Rav Yossi, they are really one in the same. That the physical touching of the mace and putting your hand over the over a mace as it, and your hand serving as the roof over the mace are mechanically one in the same. They're both forms of maga. Yes, they are different, obviously. One's physical contact and the other is putting a roof over, making your hand as a roof or sharing the same roof, but still, halachically, they're one in the same. And we went through the course of that. Also in the course of that, what we also discovered is that according to Rav Yossi, not only is he unique in this characteristic of looking at Maga and Ohel as one and the same, but he also subscribes to this idea of what's called Tuma Temuna. Tuma Temuna is the idea that when I have a covering over the mace, even though it's less than a tefach from the mace, nevertheless, that's going to stop the Tuma from going up any higher. These are the interesting and unique shitas of Rav Yossi that we uncovered, and all because it took us back to the Mishnah, where the Mishnah used the word Maga, and we were suggesting that Maga and Ohel are interchangeable, and our Mishnah is subscribing to the opinion of Rav Yossi, and this is all brought to us by Rav Yochanan the Amora. Okay, good.
If the majority of Rabbanim don't hold by Rav Yossi, right, how could they hold by him regarding this?
I'm not suggesting they do. Okay. Yeah.
This is the Amora, this is not Tanya.
No, what, Rabbi Yossi?
Yeah,
Rabbi Yossi, this is a Tana.
Yeah.
Virami de Rabbi Yossi, ad de Rabbi Yossi did not. With all that stated now, we are in Kuf Chav Vav Amud Aleph. We're about a quarter of the way down, and here we're going to introduce ourselves to a Mishnah. Now, the case of the Mishnah, obviously, is bizarre. I mean, forgive me for prejudging, meaning you didn't even see the Mishnah yet, so it's not fair. I'll let you arrive at your own conclusions, but I think you'll agree with me, but again, over here, the concepts, the constructed ideas are really what's significant. Don't get so caught up in the case. Hakel shachal basa meis umesa kelev umutal yiskufa. So the dog consumed human remains, and then the dog ends up dying on the threshold of a house, and now obviously the mouth of the dog is facing one way. And its rear is facing the other way. Now, when the dog is alive, here's what we know. We've learned this earlier. We go back to the fourth parak of the Masechta. When the dog is alive, so this is what's called Tuma Balua. Tuma that is encased in a animal, or for that matter, in a human as well. So that Tuma is not going to exit the animal. Good. So when the dog is alive, there's literally nothing to talk about. Other than, it's unfortunate, it's disgusting. Right? You could use all your labels, but halachically, we're fine. The tumah is not going anywhere. But now that the dog is dead, so the dog no longer is serving as a halachic protection of the tumah. And now the tumah is going to go out. And now, when the tumah is going to go out, where is it going to go out? Is it going to go out through the mouth? Is it going to go out through the rear? Or, I'll give you a third option. Maybe the tumah is just simply going to go, like tumas mace does, straight up from where it is right now. Now, truth of the matter is, my third option is really the easiest one to entertain, because that's what Tumas Meis normally does. Unless there's a roof over the top of it. Now, so you want to tell me now that the animal is basically serving as a ohel for that mace. And so therefore, if it's an ohel, so then there's an opening to the ohel, right? So presumably then, the best candidate of what's going to be the opening of that ohel is going to be the mouth of that dog. Okay, so now, if you're with me so far, so that means then that we can construct an argument that says that if the mace is in the dead dog that's on the iskufa, that's on the threshold of the house, and the dog of the mouth, sorry, the mouth of the dog, okay, just one editing note, and the mouth of the dog is opened up into the house, so now we can actually construct an argument that the tumah is going to go into the house. Okay, so far so good? So on this issue, there are four opinions amongst the Tanaim in terms of where the tumah is going to exit, if it exits at all. Let's take a look at this mission together. Here we start again. Did not. Hakel shachal basa mace, so the dog eats a kezias of mace. Mace hakelav, and the dog dies. Mutal iskufa, and it is right now lying on the threshold of the house. Rabbi Meir Omer im yesh b'tzavara posech tefach. Rabbi Meir says that if the total circumference of the neck of the animal is one tefach. Now we don't mean the total circumference, because remember, in other words, we need an area of one tefach by one tefach. So the math, we'll work on the math a little bit, but not now. But anyway, if there is enough space of the neck. And here, what Remeir seems to be saying, and I'll say it as clearly as possible, is that I don't need halal, I don't need a cavity of a tefach, I just need the total circumference of the neck of the dog to be one tefach, maybe it's a tumah. So then what it's going to do is it's going to be a roof and a conduit of the tumah, so that the tumah now is going to be exiting the dog via its mouth. The imlav enu mevi is the tumah, otherwise it's not going to be a conduit, and therefore the tumah is just simply going to go up from where it currently is. Rabbi Yossi Omer, and here the sheet of Rabbi Yossi, and remember all this is because we want to focus on the sheet of Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Yossi Omer, roin mecheneged ha-shakuf v'lefnim ha-bayis tamei, mecheneged ha-shakuf v'lachutz ha-bayis tamor, tahor. Don't look at the entire frame of the doorway as one entity, but rather halachically it's divided. And where is it divided? By the door stopper, right? Every frame has got a door stopper, right? A little piece of wood. This is not just a new phenomena. This is going back in time to the beginning of construction of the houses. So you have now a small frame within the frame, which is serving there as to be as a door stopper. And the way Rav Yossi views the lentil and the frame of the entrance of the house is anything from the door stopper interior is considered inside the house. Anything from the door stopper and out is considered outside the house. Fine. Hold that thought of Rabbi Yossi. We're going to come back to Rabbi Yossi because, again, our focus is on Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Lazar, Omer Piv Lifnim Abayis Tahor, Piv Lachutz Abayis Tamei, Mimnei Shetum Yossi is Derech Shul Yav. Now, as far as Rabbi Yossi is concerned, sorry, I said Rabbi Yossi. As far as Rabbi Elazar is concerned, so you're looking in the wrong direction. Meaning, where is it going to exit the animal in a normal circumstance? So the way digestion works, okay, Dr. Sugarman here, so the way digestion works is that it's going to go in through the mouth and it's going to come out through the rear. So that means to say that the tumah is going to go out to the end. So when you're asking the question of tumah sofa latzeis, where is the yitzia as it relates to digestion? So we all know the answer. So it's not the mouth of the animal, it's the rear of the animal. My love, Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira, sorry, Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira, Omer ben Kacha ben Kacha bais tameh, and Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira says that it doesn't matter which orifice is actually inside the house, whether it's the mouth or whether it's the rear, the house is going to be tameh. Rashi explains that the dog, while alive, could have vomited it, it could have excreted it. So in other words, both of those are considered both legitimate portals in which it's going to be conveying the tumah into the house, the mouth or the rear. Now, those are the four opinions regarding this particular case, but again, our focus right now is on the sheet of Rav Yossi. My love, I ain b'tzavira posech tefach, kai. Rav Yossi, Ushmamina Tuma Tumuna Bokas. Now, presumably, and the Gemara is making an assumption right now, that the amount of airspace between the mace inside the dog and the neck is less than a tefach. And we see over here that it's going to be constrained and restricted within the animal. And this would be, and just the opposite. And we see that the Tuma is not constrained and not restricted within the animal. And this goes against what you reported in the name of Rav Yossi. You reported earlier in the name of Rav Yossi that Tumah Tumuna is going to stop the Tumah. And over here, in our original understanding of the Braisa, We're saying it's not going to stop the temple from going up. Amar Rava, so Rava says, you misunderstood the Mishnah. Ronis Chalal Toma Ketani. The Rabbi Yossi Betarte Palik. The Kamalei L'Rab Meir. So the Gemara now, Rava's introduction over here is that you misunderstood Rav Yossi. Here's what Rav Yossi is saying. Rav Yossi is saying to Rav Meir, I'm going to argue with you on 2 points. Let's go over each point that I argue about. So Rav Yossi says, here's point number one I'm going to argue. We're talking now about the mace being interior, being inside of the dog. And Rabbi Meir, that's the first opinion of this Mishnah, says, well, as long as the circumference of the animal is a tefach, so then you have now an ohel situation above. Regardless of what is the actual interior cavity, meaning for Rabbi Meir, and it's hard for me to explain why, the neck is going to be serving as an ohel even though it is not a hollow cavity. And on that, Rabbi Yossi says, I'm only ready to entertain that the neck of the animal is going to be serving as an ohel only if there's actual cavity, the actual airspace in the animal is a full tefach by tefach, berum tefach. Otherwise, no. Now, I don't know how big their dogs were back in the day. It's hard to entertain the idea that there's an airspace of 1 cubic tefach within a dog, and right, maybe stomach, seems like it's talking about the neck. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, fine. Good. So, but the point is that point number one that Rav Yossi and Rav Meir are arguing about is that when we're looking at the interior of the dog, do we need actual airspace? Rav Meir says no, and Rav Yossi says yes. That's argument number one. And then I'll get to argument number two. Udikamart, the word we have in the Gemara is habayis, but probably as per the correction on this side. Ha'iskufa kulo tame, mecheneged hashkaf lefnim habayis tame, mecheneged hashakuf v'lechutz habayis tahor. And point number two, you're viewing the entire frame of the door as one entity, and that's interior of the house. Here's where I disagree on our second point. Because I say, no, the doorstop. The doorstop literally stops the door and literally is going to be the border between the interior and the exterior of the house. So those are 2 points that I argue with you about. Comes out now that according to Rabbi Yossi, we are not going against what we said previously. Previously, we talked about how if the tuma is over the, if the ol is over the mace and it's less than a tefach, according to Rav Yossi, this is what's called tuma tumuna, and therefore it's going to stop the tuma from going up. Here in our Mishnah that we just learned, there is nothing that would that would disagree with that point. Over here, the only thing Rav Yossi is disagreeing is the parameters of when the animal serves as a conduction of the tumah, I need halal, I need a cavity of a tefach bite, of a cubic tefach. And the second point, which has nothing to do with our discussion, is what's considered interior and what's considered exterior to the house. Rav Acha b'Rei de Rava Masna la behedja. And when Rav Masna learned this Mishnah, he said it exactly like we just said it. Rabbi Yossi Amar, Rowan is halal hatumah, Rowan is halal hatumah. When he says Rowan, he's not talking about the actual mace, is talking about the halal of the animal. He wants cavity of the animal. Good. And let's just wrap up our point for today. Umantana de palig aleha. What do we have so far in the course of today? We did a lot of tumas mace. Okay. I strongly encourage review the daf. Right. I've done so, and I'm going to do so again today, God willing. Right. There's a lot of ideas regarding tumas mace. It's an unusual daf in the daf yomi. We don't talk this much about Tumas Mace. They are Mishnayos and Oalos, and we don't normally treat ourselves to this discussion. In the meantime, however, we're talking about Tumas Mace. Number one, point number one we made this morning is that according to Rav Yossi, Negiah and Ohel are mechanically the same thing. And so that means that if I'm touching or if I'm Mahil on a mace, so mechanically, halachically, they're viewed as one and the same entity. That's a way to explain our Mishnah. Our Mishnah, when talking about the Kulyas HaMace, and it says that if you touch it, you're going to be tamei. What the Mishnah really means is that if you are under the same roof of it, you're going to be tamei. And our Mishnah subscribes to the opinion of Rav Yossi. We spent yesterday's daf going over this idea that according to Rav Yossi, Mag and Ol are one and the same. We finished up yesterday's daf this morning. We also, this morning, went over a couple of other unique ideas of Rav Yossi. Notably, that if I have something resting over the mace, it's going to stop the tumah from going up, even if it's less than a tefach. This is what's called Tuma Temuna. We also, by the way, just as an aside, we also introduced ourselves this morning to the idea of Tumas Ritsutsa. That sometimes the ohel of that's formed by the mace is so restricted, it's such a constricted space that it's as if you're actually physically touching the mace. But that's a separate point that's not involved with the Shita of Rav Yossi. And then we went over the idea that according to Rav Yossi, you subscribe to both the idea that Maga and Ola are interchangeable and the idea of Tuma Temuna stopping the Temuna from going up. On this last point, on the first point, who's arguing with Rabbi Yossi? Who subscribes to the opinion that Maga and Ohel are not one and the same? And this is where we're going to end off with this morning. Umantana de Palagalah, Rabbi Shemani de Tanya. In other words, we know there are Tanaim who argue on Rabbi Yossi, but like who can we identify as the Tana who argues with Rabbi Yossi? So the Gemara points to Rabbi Shimon, because we have a Braisa that says it clearly. So Rabbi Shemani de Tanya, we'll learn a Braisa. Rabbi Shimon Omer, as we now turn to Kufcha Vav Amud Beis. Shalosh tumas parashos min ames. There are three different types of tumah that come off of a mace. Now, there are more than three. However, what we're doing over here is that we're basically looking at three unique categories of transmission of tumah of a mace, and we're noting that of these three that we're about to identify, so each one of them has shared characteristics, but they're not all the same. Now, there are three ways of communicating tumah from a mace. We all know this. Maga, Masa, and Ohel. Of these three that we're going to look at right now, each one of them is going to have two of the three, and there's not going to be overlap. So this is a great summary of this morning's daf. So now we're talking about the spoonful of decomposed body. So there, the etzem kisaora, number two is bone chips, and vigola vidofek, and the actual frame of the coffin, lid of the coffin, the sides of the coffin. So melo tarvid rekav metame b'masa v'ol. So as far as decomposed body, so it gives off tuma by masa, by carrying it, and ohel and being under the same roof. Notably absent, obviously, maga. V'eino metame b'maga. V'heichan mago imachas mehen. Now where are you going to find maga? In the other ones. You'll find it by bones. You'll find it by gola v'dofek. But you're not going to find it by melo rekav tarvid. Etzem kisora. Now, as far as bones are concerned, mitame b'masav amagav ena mitame ba'ohel ve'echan ohel oim achas mehen. Now, as far as bones are concerned, magan masa, but no ohel. Now, that we've already established numerous times. But again, in the context of the brisa, we're just simply going over this structure of we have three ways of communicating to masames, and of the three, each one of them has two of the three with no overlap. Good. Now, gola v'dofek mitame b'magav ove ohel ve'ena mitame b'masa. Now, the actual sides of the coffin, the top of the coffin, give off tumas maga and ohel and not masa. Now, where is this derived from? So see Rashi over here where he attempts to find a source and then admittedly says, not sure, but it doesn't matter. In other words, according to this braisa, maga ohel not masa for gol v'dofek. Ve'hecha maso imachas mehem. Where are you going to find tumas masa? You're going to find it by the other two. You're going to find it by melo rekev tarvan. You're going to find it by bone chips, but you're not going to find it by gola v'dofek. The point that we just made is that according to Rabbi Shimon, when we talked about the melo tarvid rekev, so there is masa, and there's ohel, and there's not maga. Clearly, maga and ohel are two separate categories.